Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
Tonight. If you're like me, from time to time you run into businesses that want to rip you off, and a show like this is exactly what the doctor ordered. I myself am dealing with the issue with my utility company, TX Shoe, and the meter provider OnCar. So hopefully tonight's show is going to help me as well as help you. And we got a great guest tonight. Our guest is author, international speaker, and Fort Worth Star-Telegram's watchdog investigative columnist, Dave Lieber. He will tell us everything we need to know to protect ourselves from thugs, scammers, and corporate skullduggery. He will give us tips, tools and strategies to bite back when businesses and scammers do us wrong. His book, Watchdog Nation, won two National Book Awards for Social Change in 2009 and was named one of the top 10 consumer books of 2010. He's also the author of a second book titled Bad Dad, which we're going to discuss in the second segment of tonight's show. But ladies and gentlemen, at this time, help me welcome to the stage for the first time, Mr. Dave Lieber. Good evening, Dave. How are you?
I'm great. I'm honored to be with you tonight.
Well, thank you. Listen, Dave, I read the book, and I was very impressed. It was a great read. I found it to be very informative, well-written, and a guide I think that everybody should have in their homes. How did you come up with the concept of the book?
Well, I was being scammed on everything I was doing. I was buying this, and it turned out to be broken. I was hiring this roofer, and he goes to the wrong house and does the wrong roof. The second roofer I hired actually went to prison for roofing fraud.
Wow.
So even though I'm the watchdog newspaper columnist in the newspaper, in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, at the same time that I'm writing about people that are roofers that are bad and lawyers that are bad and, you know, products that are bad, I'm finding in my own personal life it's just a mess. And I also know everybody else that I know is the same situation, you know? So first I had to come up with a system that could protect myself from everything going on around us today, so I wouldn't make any more stupid moves when I hired or bought, you know, when I hired people or bought products. And then when I realized what I'd come up with works, and I call it Watchdog Nation, then I've just been on a mission, and I just go around and I share it with people.
Really? I mean, because what I found, you know, first of all, you do a column in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram that basically you do the same thing. And so you're helping people all the time with issues like scammers and mm-hmm. bad businesses, and you write about it, and most of the time the problem gets fixed. But I would think, who would mess with you? I mean, really, who would mess with you? Or do you not identify yourself when you're dealing with businesses? You just see how it's going to play out. You don't tell them that if you don't do me right, I can write about this. You don't tell them?
Well, no. I would never threaten anybody. In fact, I try and act like John Q. Public, and I just try and go about my business. But that's in my own personal life, you know, and then I may end up writing about it later. And then I'll go back and talk to them before I put it in the paper. But when it comes to other people's problems, I always identify myself and I talk to everybody and I get both sides of the story. And I just present whatever it is that I find. And most of the time readers read it and they go, whoa, that's a bad company, you know. And I give the company the say-so. But as you know, more and more companies are bad today than there were 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. It's very easy to find companies that just fool the heck out of you. They pop up on your screen, you know, in the internet when you're surfing, and they offer you Ackerberries or better skin or better more whitened teeth. And you look at these things, and they're like people. They're popping up in little talk-to-me boxes, you know, and it's very enticing, very persuasive, the deals they offer, and that we end up all getting suckered into sometime or another when we didn't mean to, you know?
I do. I think you said something that I found in your book that was very interesting. And I'm always the type of person that I'm very analytical. So, you know, it just kind of made me feel like, well, I'm not going around as paranoid as I thought I was, that maybe everybody else needs to be a little bit more paranoid. Because you said that everybody should be a detective pretty much, and that you shouldn't take anything for granted.
Yeah, and I learned that the hard way.
Wow.
Because, you know, and here I've been a newspaper journalist for over 35 years, and I generally have always gone into a situation believing everybody that whatever they tell me, it's true until I can prove otherwise. I take people at the good side of people, and fool me once, you know, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me, right?
Oh.
But then I began to see that those words don't play anymore. In the last 10 years, especially in the last five, even worse in the past three, you know, legitimate businesses started acting what I call in a kind of a gangster corporation way, where they mistreat their customers and they ignore them and they pretend they can't hear them and they send them robot replies. And it just is annoying, and they have to talk to people overseas who can't, you know, they can't understand. And it just makes buying and complaining and refunding and exchanging and fixing such an ordeal in people's lives now that they spend so much time talking to the electric company like you want to. And, you know, it's annoying. And it ruins your life because you're in a fight all of a sudden for your money.
And well, you know what? One thing I find so odd is that everybody, I would think, that's in business is fighting to keep the customer in their business, I would think. But the customer service that you receive in these businesses today says everything but.
Right, right.
What happens really
sticks out when somebody goes above and beyond for you. It happens now about once a month, you know. I was just at Jersey Mike's getting a sandwich, and they have to make contact with you when you walk in the store, and they have to make contact with you when you walk out of the store. It's part of their culture, you know. And it's a little bit overboard, but it's what they're taught to do to make the place special, develop relationships with people and their sandwiches. And, you know, that's a heightened customer service experience. And then the other end of the, you get AT&T, where chances are when you call someone from AT&T and ask any kind of question, there's a 50% chance they're going to give you the wrong answer. And then when you go and actually act on what they just told you to do, you'll find out that you were given bad information, but you just drove 4 miles to the AT&T phone store, you know?
You know, you talk about them quite a bit in the book. Obviously, you found them to be the number one company that people complained against, pretty much?
Pretty much, yep. And, I mean, I personally just have complaints, you know, every week about them, you know, because I have different accounts, different kinds of service with them. And, you know, it just never stops. Last week, it was the cell phone bill. It had a whole bunch of calls on it that we didn't agree to make, and we had to call, and they took them off, you know. So that's cramming when stuff is thrown on your bill. And they're not allowed under federal law, they say, to really do a better job protecting us, but that's just annoyance number one, you know. Then you go to the phone store to buy something because they told you on the phone that it costs a certain price and a certain thing, and then you get there, and, of course, it's not that price, and they don't have it. And it's just rampant with that company, and so much of us spend so many hundreds of dollars with them, you know, and I don't get that same level of complaints about Verizon or T-Mobile or Sprint.
Well, then let's start there. Since AT&T seems to be the number one company that you're having a problem with, which, in my opinion today, is TXU and OnCar, and we will talk about that later in the show.
Sure.
But,
yeah.
And I'm going to say that about 100 times before the show's out tonight. But anyway, when you go into a business and things are not as they're supposed to be, I mean, just basic common sense 101 customer service 101, let's just say that, is not where it should be. What is the first thing that you should do when you notice that your bill is not right, whether it's on the phone or whether it's going to the business in person? What are the tools that you need to use going in with this initial complaint?
Well, it's amazing the tool that you need as a part of Watchdog Nation. All you need is a blank sheet of paper and a pen.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as you write on the top of that blank sheet of paper, AT&T, August 26, 2011, and then you have now what I call a power sheet.
Mm.
See, most people, Carrie, they write on the back of envelopes or on Post-it notes, and they don't get the name or who they talk to, and it's very disorganized, and they don't have the power. So when they call the person on the other side of the world, you know, in India or wherever, they're begging that person for, like, help, and that person has 90% of the power, and you, the customer, have 10%.
Mm.
So now you got this power sheet in front of you, and you get the guy on the phone, you know, and you shake the paper into the phone. You say, how are you? And you go like that, you know, the way Rush Limbaugh does it, like that. And then you click the pen into the phone. I'm going to do that right now. I don't know if you heard that.
So you're letting them know I got a pen and I got a pen.
Yeah. You say, now, he says, what's your problem? And instead of just saying, well, you know, I got totally screwed by you, your company, for the 50th time this year, you say, hey, sir, I just got to ask you a question. And then you ask him the one thing he hates to be asked by an American more than anything, which is, do you know what that question is?
What's your name? Or
right.
Where
you at? Right. And he won't tell you because it's like he's scared to tell you. So you force him to tell you. And the way I do it is I say, you know, I know you're telling me I'm going to get a reference number, and I'll, you know, but I don't talk to numbers. I actually talk to names. My name's Dave. I'm in Texas. Howdy. What's your name?
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll stumble around, and because he's being taped by his company, he'll then tell you his fake name. And the guy that I talked to from Linksys Wireless Router, 2 a.m. in New Delhi, months back, he said his name was Elvis. And so I said, hi, Elvis. And I knew I had the only Elvis in New Delhi, you know. So if my computer didn't get fixed right, I could go to New Delhi and scream, "Where's Elvis?"
And nobody's going to know who you're talking about.
Great. But then I ask him for his employee identification number, and I put that down. And I make a big show of writing his name and writing his ID. I read him back his number real slow. So now it's not 90 to 10 anymore. Now it's 70-30 because he knows who I am, and now he knows I'm learning who he is. Then I ask him where he is, and he'll always kind of wiggle out of that. He doesn't want to tell you, but if you force him to, he'll tell you he's in wherever, and you write that down. And now if this is second call, you've also got the other person who you spoke to 2 weeks ago about the same problem, their name, their number, where they are, and you tell him that you know who they are, and you read their names and numbers back. So now he knows that you keep this record, this log. So now it's 60% for him, 40 for you. And here's how you close the deal, Carrie. You say, "Listen, Elvis, 279-2103 in New Delhi, I want to let you know that I'm taping this call for customer quality control, and now I'm going to tell you my problem."
Now so you do all of this before you even start saying what the problem is?
If it's a serious problem in which I know this company is going to give me grief about, yeah. If it's just some little thing where I got to call the phone company up and I got to get them to take $10 off the bill, I don't mess with it until I have to do it the second time. But generally, you don't have to do it a second time because, you know, most stuff you can call and get it taken care of right away. This is for when these people are digging in and they're telling you that, well, I wrote a story in the paper today about a guy whose gas bill went from $60 to $2,200 in 1 month.
Wow.
And when he called up and said, "How did I go $2,200 in 1 month? I don't have a pool, a grill, a hot tub." They said, "We don't know, sir. That's your problem, but we'll give you a payment plan where you can pay us over 6 months." So he went to me, and, you know, let's just say that right now he has a brand-new meter at his house, brand-new gas lines going out to the street, and Atmos Gas put out new shrub around his gas meter, you know, to make it look good, and they paid for it because they knew I'd write about it in the newspaper today. So they went all out to, like, give him a designer gas meter, you know.
Y'all hear that TXG went on car because they told me they was going to listen tonight. Go figure. But anyway,
that's my favorite subject.
You're kidding.
Oh, TXU and Encore, and they're listening? Let's get to work.
Okay, well, let's get to work. What do you know about TXU and Encore? Please tell the audience, what do you know about these companies?
Well, they used to be the same company, and they come out of, they're the heirs of the monopoly that used to exist until about year 2000 or so. There was a company, when I moved here, and it was called Texas Utilities, and then it became TU. Energy.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and then after TU Energy, it became TXU. And then during deregulation, they had to split off the power line business. Whoever pushes the juice through the wires that you see everywhere. And that became Encore, O-N-C-O-R.
Right.
And they do about one-fifth of Texas geographically doing the power lines. And then there's about 60 companies where you live that are electricity providers. TXU is one of them.
Right.
And then so you shop and you buy electricity from this company or that company or other company. And all the companies are different. They all have different rates, and they all have different customer service cultures. So you got to find a good company and a bad company. So what happens in Texas right now is people are paying 12 cents for a kilowatt, and the guy right next door to him is paying 8 cents for the same kilowatt because he got a better deal. He shopped around. So that leaves that's a $200 spread in July and a $200 spread in August, you know, on your electric bill. And so I pass around a sheet, which I can tell people how to get. You just go to google.com and you just type in the search box, Dave Lieber Electricity Guide.
Really?
This is for Texans, and it's just Dave Lieber, L-I-E-B as in boy, E-R, Electricity Guide. And this story comes up that I've given out tens of thousands of copies all over the state. I want to put it in the hands of every Texan because it really shows them how to shop, get a company with a low rate and low complaint rate, and be happy and be locked in on a fixed rate. I wrote a story last week about a guy whose electric bill in Texas went up from May from about 12 cents a kilowatt hour, I believe it was, to 18 cents a kilowatt hour. His electric bill was over $1,000.
Wow.
His variable rate went up, this company, Dynawatt, like that in 1 month because of the early August 2011 heat spike, and so this customer paid the price, and so that's what we're all worried about, you know. And Encore will tell you, "Hey, everybody, just shop around and get the lowest rate you can. And TXU is the heir of the big company that used to be the monopoly, and so they have the biggest audience. They've they've lost a lot of customers, of course, over time, but they've gotten many back who have gone to other companies, didn't like it, or go back to TXU. Plus, TXU has a very aggressive marketing program. Their main competitor is a company called Reliant, out of Houston, you know, that does South Texas mostly, but then Reliant came up here. And so those are the two big alpha male, you know, and apologies to the females who are listening, but, you know, bumping into each other on the top level. But then there's these 40, 50, 60 other companies that are knocking it out. And it's a gamble because these companies buy electricity ahead of time, kind of in a bet to see what kind of cheap electricity they can get. And then it's really, really tough because it's a market based on the price of natural gas and the market's been steady, but then you've got all these electrical events that unsettle things. And so it's one of the most fascinating industries to watch in America because Texans for many years were paying among the highest electricity rates in the country, and now recently it's just about, we've dropped down to about average. There's just as many people paying more elsewhere as paying less, so we're back in the mix. And the critics say, well, the prices are still too high, but the deregulators say, no, this is what we always aim for. And the market is stable because natural gas is low because there's so much of it now. And so people are paying a lot less. But here's the catch. The electric bills this year are so high because of the record heat. And I worry about all the people out there, and it's most people, almost everybody, who can't afford their bills this summer, who are spending so much money on their electricity bill, even if they have a good deal. And especially the elderly that are living on fixed incomes, you know, and they don't want to run their AC, so they sit out in, you know, 100-degree
temperature on the porch because it's too hot in the house.
Yeah, and it's too hot. It's over 100 degrees here every day, you know, every day. And I just worry about how they're going to pay their electric bill, if they're going to be safe.
Well, you know what I've decided to do, Dave? I've decided that I'm going to make it my life's mission to get 100, I'm sorry, not 100, I'm sorry, let's get that right, 1 million signatures on a petition about the on-car meters because I don't believe them. I'm so sorry. I think they're rigged.
Let's talk about that. That's a whole new subject. You're bringing up the smart meter installation, right? It's a big subject, and I'd love to talk to you about it.
Okay, tell me what you know about the smart meter.
Oh, I've studied it for a couple of years, and then last week I finally got my first smart meter. They just popped it in, you know, and it's something I've studied for 2 years. And I wasn't home to watch, which I would have liked to have seen it because I've written about it so many times. But, you know, the smart meter thing is something that's spreading across America. Mm-hmm. It's one of those changes they're doing, just like when they started to tell us we couldn't put our bags of trash outside in the black trash bags anymore. Now we had to put them in these carts with wheels and big heavy lids, and, you know, and they kind of all forced us to get into that. Now they're pretty much forcing us to get into this, too.
Right.
And so it's pretty much mandated by the government, although people in California and other places are challenging it. But I checked with the Texas Public Utility Commission last week, and they said, no, you're not allowed to challenge the installation of your smart meter. That's what I was told. So,
wow.
So,
you know what? But they got the fox watching the hen house, though, because if you have a complaint against the smart meter, who comes out to check the complaint? OnCar. Well, if you got a problem with them, you know, how can you double-check yourself? I mean,
the answer is always
Thing.
Well, first of all, let's not go into the assumption that the smart meter is a bad thing, okay? I've studied that, too, and I'll be honest with you. I, in my heart, don't believe that smart meters are inaccurate, and I'll tell you why.
They're rigged, and if they're not inaccurate,
I don't believe they're rigged either.
Okay.
I really don't. I think this might be one thing that's going to become an urban legend. There's plenty of problems with smart meters. Number one, they monitor your electricity every 15 minutes. Number two, they have the power to basically shut you down in ways now that they didn't have remotely from their control center during...
But Dave, I have to disagree with you. How is it that my bill, when they put it on my house on the 3rd of May, went from $100 a month to $300 the very next month, $328 to be exact, and then the following month, $525. And this is all since May.
Oh, well, I can tell you the answer to that because I think I figured that out.
Oh, I'm listening.
What's your kilowatt per hour rate that you're paying?
You know what? And I've had the same, obviously, for a while. They got me at 14%. Can you believe that?
Oh, gosh. You see, so they're right there. You're paying 14, and I'm paying 9. Okay, so that's 5 cents per kilowatt hour times 3,000 hours that you and I, let's say, on average, would use in a month.
But see,
that's
they
a lot
say
of money.
That I went from 700 kilowatts to 3,000. I question
okay,
that.
Okay, so I'm going to give you the answers in bullet points. Number one, you didn't do what I've been talking about to you for the last few minutes in that you haven't actually shopped, and you're paying one of the highest rates in the top 95th percentile of electric ratepayers in North Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your fault as a consumer for not,
mm-hmm.
you know, and now that you know you go to Google and you go Dave Lieber Electricity Guide, you can get out of that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to. Number two reason is because it got hot here. And the air conditioner just has to run and run and run and run. You can't deny it.
And Dave, I almost want to believe you on that, but I'm going to tell you and the listening audience why that's not true.
Okay,
How many days have we had consistent temperatures of over 100 degrees? That has been almost 60 now, 60 days straight. So how is it that if I have changed nothing in my pattern, that we went from 328 last month to 525 the following month? That's an impossibility.
Okay, it's really not because you're paying 14 cents per kilowatt hour, so your increases are magnified many times more than mine, because you're paying almost double of what I'm paying.
But you got the same exact almost temperature.
Well, you might not have the Freon in your system. Might have like
leaked
a little.
Oh no, it's funny thing you say that. My system has been checked within the last 60 days because all of that became an issue. Everything
has
been maintained.
Good. Now here's bullet point number three on how that could be accurate. Okay, your old meter was old. It may have been 10 years old, or it may have been 30 years old.
That was not the case, but okay. I'm hearing maybe that applies
meter,
to someone else, but no, my meter had been changed more recently than that, but okay.
Okay, my meter was 17 years old when it was pulled out last week.
My meter was changed since I've had this particular house, and I've been here almost 10 years.
Okay, so your
that's
meter,
not the case.
So they put in a different meter that is a modern meter. It's like going from the first iPod to now having an iPhone.
I got to finish this.
This is like George
Orwell. Cannot check OnCar. That's not fair. If 50% of your customers have a problem, then there's a problem.
50%? No, 50% don't have a problem.
Have you gone online and listened to some of these complaints on Facebook?
But the percentage of the complaints is next to nothing. It's 1% or 2% of the total audience. Now, let me continue on with two more points here that I got to make about this, okay?
Okay.
Well, one quickly. This is like an Orwellian thing they put in your house that basically takes over your electrical thing. That we're not even talking about the privacy on that. Another point that needs to be made, though, is that this was checked by a company out of Austin that is a very, very, very reputable investigator, report taker, finder of information, and has great credibility. And
well, what's the name of the person, really?
I can't remember now because it's been a year or so. But when I read the report that they put.
Okay, you can't just say that without seeing who.
Oh, I can look it up in a minute.
Giving them that much credibility.
I'd have to look it up. I'd have to look it up in online and type in, you know, basically, PUC, Texas PUC report on smart meters.
Okay.
And that would bring up the report on a PDF.
I found equally as many articles, and I put several of them on this page. There's quite a few articles that say just the opposite of what you just said, and you know that's out there.
Well, everything that I've said now, I've concluded after writing all those stories that you talk about. If you go back and look at what I've written about OnCar and all the smart meter stuff, you say I have probably been a critic of OnCar. But the more I see of the way these things come off and the percentage of people that are upset and what the company said in Austin when they looked at it and everything, I don't think it's as bad as everybody thinks. I think the accuracy rate on these meters is about 1% or 2%, which is the
standard. People work – you know what? We're gonna see when I get those million signatures. We're going to see about that. But you know what? People were complaining prior to this heat wave that we had. People were complaining about smart meters way before May, and you know that.
Well,
so
of course they have.
It's not all about the heat wave.
No, I know,
so,
but your problem, you know what? Your problem is not the smart meter. Your problem is the fact that you are paying 14 cents for a service that you should be paying 8.5 cents for.
Let's just deal with that as part of the problem. But you still can't tell me how it went from 700 to 3,000. That's an impossibility.
No, it's not.
You have exactly the same pattern for two consistent cycles. I mean, last month and this month.
Don't you hear your air conditioner running 24 hours a day a lot?
For the whole period. For the whole period. My thermostat is on 80. Is on 80. I mean, seriously, which is uncomfortable
high.
For me.
That's
but
high.
Due to what's going on, I don't have a choice because I can't afford to give them $1,000 a month or $2,000 or whatever. So, Dave, we're going to agree to disagree that I know for a fact OnCar has done something that's not right on my meter.
We're working to prove it, so let's just keep going down the list of things that you think about here, because this to me is not an emotional issue. It's a scientific issue.
When you're looking at my bill, it's emotional for me.
I'm not happy
yet.
With
you know
my
what?
Electric bill, but let me explain to you that next month your bill could drop $300 if you just got a better contract.
And you know what? It's funny you say that because I talked to them today, and they told me how they looked at my meter yesterday, and it looks like that I'm going to be like 1,000 under what I was last month. They said, so whatever you're doing is working. And I said, I haven't done anything.
Well, okay, now we're getting somewhere because that shows me a pattern in the opposite direction.
Well, that tells me that they came and checked my meter yesterday because I've been complaining, and they're lying to me. That's what that tells me. It tells me nothing other than that.
Well, do you know for a fact, though, that all three of your last meter readings were actual reading and not estimates?
You know what, and who knows? Because remember when they put the smart meter on your house, then they no longer have to come out and personally check the meter.
How are your windows?
I'm going to move on from OnCar. But you know
wait, we could go
all night.
Just one more question. How are your windows? Are they sealed?
They are sealed.
You can't feel air coming in or out of them when you run your finger along the...
But see, with all of those variables that you're using, mm-hmm. you still have the same situation from month to month to month. So if nothing has changed, we're comparing apples to apples and not apples to oranges.
I write stories all the time about people that prove their meters were wrong,
mm-hmm.
and that's another piece of the science that I've been learning. And I write one just about every month where
mm-hmm.
somebody proved that they're either their gas meter, their electricity meter, or their water bill is wrong. And those are the 1 out of 1,000 cases, and that's why I write about them, because I honor these people. And what I've learned is, you know, they do have to come back and they do have to check. And they do have to test it, and they sometimes make you pay for the testing, and sometimes they don't. And then you file a complaint with the Public Utility Commission, which makes it even a little more serious offense, you know.
But you know what, Dave? There's some lawsuits pending, and I plan to become part of one because I talked to two attorneys this week about this. When you get through, I want everyone who has the complaint that I have, let's get involved with the lawsuit, and let's sign the petition. Because at the end of the day, people don't go file lawsuits typically. In large numbers, unless there's a problem. People just don't jump. You know, a lot of people complain about things, but most people don't go to the extent of getting involved in a lawsuit unless they feel like they've been wronged. And so I say the bigger the number, the better. So if you got the same problem as I have, then please join me.
Well, the other crime, if there is a crime that these electricity companies do, is their use of double talking, fine print, and changing terms where they totally – more often than not, they deceive the consumer in how much the bill really is ahead of time with different fees, and the way they don't explain, they do explain, and they make it very difficult. And the law allows them to get away with some things, and that's also very, very bad too, I think, you know, worth mentioning.
But I think, too, though, there should not be a such thing as a monopoly. OnCar should not be the only person servicing these meters. We actually should have an option of another company somewhere, not just one company.
I mean, if you make
a complaint, you're complaining to the same person.
No, I agree with you 100%. I think that would be fantastic. If you could get some other company or some other service to double-check OnCar's work and be right over their shoulder, that would be great, because OnCar started they got a vice president of customer service. They had such a bad year about 2 years ago. They got in trouble over a lot of things, over the way they trimmed trees and the fact that they didn't have a good warning system during storms. And I showed that electric transmission companies all over America had Twitter and they had maps and everything. Well, good for OnCar. They finally put all that in. Now you can find out where the outages are and everything like that. But they have a long way to go, really, and it's hard to shake them up. So if you can get an advocate, you know, who would be, and that's what it would be. And there is the office in Austin, though, called the Office of the Public Council of Public Utility, I think, or that's not probably the full name, but they help, they represent consumers. And I would contact them. You Google the Office of the Public Council of the PUC of Texas, and it would probably give you the correct title. And you would go call them and read about what they're up to, because they're probably involved in things like this. There's an organization called Texas ROSE, R-O-S-E,
mm-hmm.
which stands for Ratepayers of Something Saving Electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And Texas ROSE is leading the fight on consumers on things like that. There's a group in Dallas that is actually two ladies together that run this anti-smart meter campaign that's all over the Internet, and they've done a wonderful job. I've written about them.
And I'm doing a show on it next week. I will go find them. I mean, definitely. So, you know what, because for the sake of getting to everybody else's issues, I'm not going to take up no more time on mine and on car tonight and TXU. We're going to deal with that next week. But I'm going to find those ladies, the Rose ladies you just mentioned, and the other people, and I'm going to try to make them a part of next week's show.
I'll help you find them.
Okay, wonderful. Well, then let's talk about some other things that you talked about in the book. And there were so many things, y'all. This is a must-have book. I kid you not, I was just so surprised that you put so much information out there. Even speaking about what you spoke about earlier about the roofer, tell these the listening audience how to go about the roofer situation, because, you know, most people today are going to deal with some type of roofing issues with all these weird weather patterns that we're having. I myself have had hail damage recently.
So
how do you go about choosing a roofer?
Well, because I made mistakes hiring two different roofers who both turned out bad, I learned a checklist. And so if you want to listen, how many of these things would you know to do? Okay. There's about 6, 7, or 8 things on it. Number one, check their reputation on the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
You type in their name of the company, and then you type in the word scam,
mm-hmm.
and you Google it and see if anybody says, this company scammed me.
Mm-hmm.
Then you type in the roofing company's name and the word ripoff, and you see if anybody says, this company ripped me off. If you get one, that's no big deal. If you get 20, you've answered your question. It's time to find a new company. So that's the first thing. Check them on the Internet. And you do that with everything you buy. And we can talk about that a little more later. But that's the most important part of Watchdog Nation, is Googling everything before you buy or hire anybody. And then the next thing you do is you get bids. Because if you get 3 different estimates from 3 different companies, the price will be wildly swinging from high to low. And it's remarkable about that. Number 3 is you get a few references. You ask them for a list of people who got the same kind of roof you did, and they give you a list of 5 or 10, and you call the 1 or 2 or 3 on the bottom of the list, not the ones on the top. If they won't give you references, you know, that's a little scary, because if they've been in business for a while, they'd be more than happy to tell you some satisfied customers.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing you do is you find out if you call City Hall and you ask for the department that gives roofing permits, and you say, hey, do you guys know ABC Roofers? Do they actually pull permits from you legally like they're supposed to before they do work on people's houses? And if they go, yeah, then they're legitimate. But if they go, never heard of them, then you know the answer to your question. Because if they're not pulling permits in your city to do roof work, then they haven't done any roofs or they're doing it illegally. So that's a pretty easy call. Then you ask the company to show you insurance, that they have proof of insurance, because sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. And then you find out if they're a member of your local roofing association by Googling, like if you're in Utah, the Utah Roofing Association, and calling them and saying, hey, is Joe Blow Roofing a member? And if they say yes, that's a good sign. And let's see, then if you really want to get picky about it, you can call their supplier and say, does Joe Blow Roofing pay his bills to you on time?
Mm.
And they'll say yes or no. At that point,
let me ask you, let's mention one thing. You, now, and this is, listen, for everybody, because I would not have ever in a million years thought this would have been a problem, especially for Dave or anybody else. Who did you get the referral from for your roofer,
uh-huh.
which was crazy, y'all? Who did you ask about a referral for a roofer?
Well, the first time I did it, I asked all my neighbors who their roofer was, and they all liked this company called Signature. And then he went to the wrong house one day and roofed the wrong house.
Which
and the second roofer, I called my insurance agent and said, do you recommend a roofer? And he recommended a guy who actually went to prison later on, about a year later, because he had scammed so many people.
Now, how is it that your insurance agent missed that? I mean,
because
y'all missed it. How do you think he missed that?
Well, because the guy started off, the roofer started off honestly.
Okay.
He was putting together a good business. The guy knew him from good work. And then he got into something bad. And I don't know what it was. was it drugs or was it gambling? But he became, his money life became a rat hole. And then he started stealing from Peter to pay to Paul. And he never could catch up, and he got worse, and he became criminally pathological, you know, and that's why he ended up in prison. So
you said in your book you never pay them in advance, which is a lot of people make that mistake.
Right, right. Well, I learned that the hard way. You know, I pay people in advance, and no. And you don't give people your insurance check before they start the work either. The
do
best
you even give them the insurance check, or do you ask your insurance company to make the check out to you?
Well, it depends on what the procedures are and what type of, whether it's car or homeowner. I mean, it's all kinds of different rules, so I don't know generally the answer on that. But the key thing, though, would be if a guy says he needs supplies, you know, that's one thing. You know, you can put in, like, say, a couple $100 and go with him to Home Depot and
right.
help him buy his supplies for $200. But other than that, you say you get the contract that you all have, which is just a piece of paper between the two parties, and it says on the top, contract between Kerry Hines and ABC Roofing, July 1st, 2011, he agrees to put this roof on, and in return, I will give him $200 for supplies. When he's one half done, I will give him 50%. When he's fully done, I will inspect and give the remaining 50%. And that he signs the contract. And so if he doesn't go beyond the 50% and he disappears, you know, you can go hire another roofer to finish the job, and you still haven't lost your money.
Now, you know, and we're in Texas, y'all, a lot of roofers here are Mexican, and if you say sign anything, you know what pretty much happens. They're not wanting to sign contracts. So
yeah.
Do you say walk away?
Oh, absolutely, because everything is dependent upon you having a piece of paper with their signature, because under the law, without a contract, it's an oral agreement that doesn't count for anything. And so I've seen some wacky contracts that people like sketch out on a napkin, but no, it's just a piece of paper, and it can be handwritten, but it has to be legal. It has to be signed by both, and it has to say contract, and both parties have a copy, because then if something goes bad, you can go into small claims court in Texas and sue for up to $10,000, and based on that contract that you have, if you spent $5,000 already, the judge will say, well, show me pictures of what was done, and you'll say, no, you get the money, sir, you know, and so you have to protect yourself, and we can't live in a handshake society anymore where we just, you know, trust everybody. It's one thing if it's your brother-in-law, but if it's a friend of a friend of a friend, you're running about a 50% chance, in my opinion, that things aren't going to work out the way you dream.
Mm.
That's
okay.
High.
Nothing is as it seems. So you just really, as far as just taking even references from friends anymore, you don't even take that for granted anymore. You still need to do your own research.
Yeah, I got burned by too many people like the roofer that went bad. In the time they were good, and then over time, especially in the last 3 years in this economy, good business people have had to do all kinds of crazy things to stay afloat, and so they make the potato chip bags with bigger price, more air, less chip, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And that's the same for everything we buy now. You know, it's hard to get a good, honest day's work out of somebody who comes to your house to fix something, to do it right without charging you way more than what you really need to pay for it. The car repair guy who's, you know, you don't even have a problem, but he's looking you dead in the eye and he says you need an $800 job. And if you don't take that car to another place like I just did a couple weeks ago and say, do I need this? You know, you're really basically throwing away $800. Because the chances are 50% that, unless the car is really broken, the chances are 50% that what they tell you is broken, unless you can see it, unless you understand it, unless you really, really believe it in your heart. Not because he's persuasive, because he does this 20 times a day to people just like you to get money out of you for parts you don't need, for repairs you don't need. And this just happens to me. It happens to everybody. You know, so I was told recently by my automobile dealer that I needed to spend $1,200 to fix something. And I took it to another place. A Midas garage on Roof Snow Drive in North Richland Hills, Texas. He said, you need zero. This is not broken.
Damn.
I went back to the dealership, and I told them what happened. And they fired the guy who said that because he was part of a pattern of doing this to other people.
Wow. And we're going to talk about that in just a second, how you can avoid and keep that from happening to you. If you just tuned in, you come center stage tonight for the topic, Buyer Beware or Be Scammed. We're speaking with author, speaker, and Four Star Telegram investigative columnist, Dave Lever. He's teaching us how not to get scammed. Tonight's segment of Center Stage is being brought to you by African American News and Commentary Blog, your single source for news, events, and commentary that is of unique interest to African Americans. They're located on the web at www.AfricanAmericanNewsAndCommentary.com. If you've got a question for Dave tonight, get on the phone lines. Give us a call at 347-850-8390. Again, the phone number to call is 347-850-8390. You say in your book that you need to know, there's one law you need to know about, and you say that you go to the Internet, and in the search engine, you said you type in your home state and the words deceptive trade practices, and that will let us know what?
That you, whatever state you live in, there's a Deceptive Trade Practices Act that says that it's against the law in that state to tell you that you're getting something and then you buy it and it's not what they told you it was going to be. The price is different, or it's advertised different, or it's not what it purports to be. And they're violating deceptive trade. And that is a that pays damages in court, and that's serious stuff. And the attorney general of the state that you live in needs to know about that with a formal complaint by you. And that puts the heat on whoever it is right away, because the AG sends them a letter.
But you said that even applies, like, in the car repair situation. If he tells you something needs to be done on your car and that doesn't need to be done, how does that work?
Well, if you have a contract with a car repair guy, which most people don't really, really get, before he does the work where it's in writing, and he says, I'm going to fix part A, B, and C, and it's going to cost you $1,500. If you have that contract, then you can say to the attorney general, look, I took this, or in small claims court, look, I took this to another dealer, another repair guy, and he told me I needed none of it, and he's here today to testify to that effect. So then he testifies as an expert that what's on that written agreement between you and the first guy is not true. Then you win. But most people don't get that written estimate before the work is done that they take out. And so if you're doing serious work like transmission work or motor repair, and you're going to be paying $2,000 or $3,000, you know, you worry that the guy's going to take your car apart and then say, I can't put it back unless you give me $2,000 more. And that's what these guys do. They hold your car hostage. So to get around that, you get the written thing. And if he won't give it to you in writing, you just don't do work with him, because there's plenty of honest people out there that'll do the work for you in writing.
And you know what's so bad about it? They've got something new, and I've had like $500 worth of work done on my car this month. And one thing I noticed has changed. Back in the day, they used to tell you what was wrong with your car, and then you decided if you could pay them. Today, if they tell you what's wrong with your car, they tell you they're going to charge you a fee. They're going to charge you a fee for whatever it is that they say is wrong with your car. Well, in the scenario you just gave us, they could tell us anything, and we still got to pay them for what they say they assess to be wrong with the car.
Well, first of all, you're probably going to the wrong garage.
Wow.
Because garages aren't all like that. A lot of garages are like hometown places where they get to know you and they won't screw you around. So you find one like that, and they do exist, you know, and it's trial and error. The way I find them is when I bring a car to them and they tell me no. I say, I got this knock, I got this ping. And they go, no, you don't need anything fixed. So they, like, I walked in with a question, and they go, no, you don't need that fixed. I walk out going, they didn't magnetize me and make me come in and spend a lot of money, you know?
Right.
That's a crucial way to find people. And I found a garage that doesn't charge to fix light bulbs and tells me I don't need to have this done. And, you know, and they're honest. And I've had many, 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 many who did the exact opposite to me over the past 40 years or so that I've been driving. And, you know, so it's more prevalent today than it ever has been, too. But here's what's really interesting. It's all codes now. So they put a code machine, attach it to your car. They come out with this code. The code then tells them what's wrong with your car.
Mm.
It's pretty hard to, well, it probably isn't, but generally the code tells you what's wrong with the car. You can get a code machine yourself at a store, and you can at home check out the code and see what it is and know it says that transmission is going or whatever.
Okay.
And so just because the first guy tells you that you need this, that, and the other, unless you verify it with the code machine, and that's not the right name for it, and, or the second opinion at a different garage a mile away, or your brother-in-law who works in a garage who could take a quick look at it for you, or the internet. You know, you Google it and you just ask about it and find out if your year of your make and model of the car is prevalent for that's a prevalent problem for that make. You know, get more information and you sort of use your brain instead of just because the guy says. Now, if you got towed in and the car won't run, that's you're more at their mercy. But always remember, you can get it towed to another place too. Your car's not really held hostage. If you get bad vibes when you walk into a place and you don't have they won't give you a written estimate and won't agree and give you a copy, and you quickly have a phone that has a search engine Google box on it, and you go to the little search box on a phone in the store there in the garage, and you type in the name of the garage, Joe Smith Garage, Fort Worth, Texas, and scam. Joe Smith Garage, Fort Worth, Texas, and ripoff. You could find right then and there in that moment if this guy has a reputation that you wished you had looked up before you gave him $1,000. You know, we didn't have that power in humanity just until the other week, the other year.
Right.
So now we can look up everything before we commit. And when people are knocking on our door, we can lock the door, tell them to wait a minute, go check them on Google, find out ripoff, scam. They show up, go back and go, thank you, but we won't be needing any of your magazines. Thank you, but we won't need any of your books for the children at the hospital. You know, because it's not true.
And you don't let salespeople in your house, period.
No one. No one. You should, you know what? I don't even buy from someone that knocks on my door.
That's true.
And, you know, if I'm looking for a home security system, the last thing I want to do is go and become part of that whole scam that exists where the home security guy comes to your door and, you know, sells you something you don't need. That's a 5-year, 60-month contract that you can't get out of, that you're committed to, and it's a crooked company, and that's happening all over, and it's an epidemic, and it's crazy, and if you Google it, you can look up these companies and see who's bad, and the attorney generals have investigated them in many states, and if you're looking for a security system, you know, you call the companies and have them come to your house and make a presentation with an appointment. You don't buy electricity from somebody. The guy who came to my door selling electricity from TXU about a couple of months ago or so, he was deceptive. And what
really?
He said, he lied to me about the whole setup, and I wrote about it in the newspaper. The guy
How did
who
you
came
discover
to,
that, you know, he wasn't telling you the truth?
He told me that TXU had the number one rated customer service at J.D. Power, and I knew that wasn't true. And I called him on it, and you know, he scat, but he was spreading false information, and he got in trouble. But then I also caught a Home Alone guy came to my door 4 or 5 months ago. I wrote about it in the newspaper. He didn't have a badge on that under state of Texas. You have to be licensed to knock on someone's door selling a Home Alone. He didn't have a badge. He lied about it. He lied about what was happening with everything, you know.
Anybody that comes to your door selling anything should have a badge.
Yeah, they should also, not only that, but cities basically force them to get permits to go door-to-door soliciting often, and so they need to have a permit. And they say that if someone comes to your door and doesn't have the right badge or anything, you know, you should call 911 because the police want to come, and they want to basically take that person off the street if they're not properly licensed, because that's a criminal possibility, staking out places to rob or selling something without a permit that's not legal, you know, so it's very serious.
Now, this
is
in the state of Texas, y'all. I don't know what laws apply in your state, but in the state of Texas, they need a permit, and they should have pretty much a badge if they're coming to your door selling anything.
Yeah, and I bet you it's most states have that rule.
Okay.
Because they want to protect their people.
Absolutely. You know, another thing that I saw in your book, and I've had it, I'm probably sure most people have, you know, every couple of days I'll get something in my email. A lot of times my spam will pick it up, but in some cases it doesn't, where somebody's telling me that I'm this lucky person who they are going to trust with all this money, and they're going to send me this check, and I need to deposit it into my bank account and all of this sort of stuff. You're saying never trust that kind of thing.
It's always wrong. Yeah, it's 100% wrong. I mean, I've studied those, and I've written a lot about it, and it's 100% wrong. And unfortunately, people get addicted to those things, and they go into them over and over and over because the language is persuasive. And they have a propensity to fall for this stuff. Some very smart people have a propensity to fall for this stuff. Poor people, rich people, all kinds of people fall for this stuff. Every day, thousands of Americans believe that they won the lottery in Ireland, the Irish sweepstakes, and that if they will send a check for $3,700 by Western Union or by MoneyGram to an address in Canada, then the rest of the $1 million will then come to them. And see, MoneyGram was even busted by the government for having scammers on its staff in Canada who contributed to this scam. And, you know, this is along with the granny scam where this person calls up and says, "Grandma, this is your oldest grandson calling from London. Don't tell mommy, but I've been robbed and I need you to wire me money."
Ooh.
That's a big one, the granny scam.
No.
You know, and also the Facebook scam where you get an email message on Facebook from all your friends or from one of your friends saying, "I'm in London right now. I just got mugged. You know, I need you to send me money." Those are like really three that just hit everybody all the time everywhere, and hopefully
okay,
nobody will fall for those. You know?
First of all, doesn't the grandmother know who her grandchild is? And don't your friends know who you are and who you're not? So how is it that
No, no, because here's what happens. Grandma goes, "Joey? Joey, is that you?"
Oh.
And he goes, "Yeah, Mom, that's me, Joey. It's Joey, yeah." Like that. Okay?
So they get really very vulnerable old people because, you know, average person be like, "Joey, you know, I just saw Joey," or something. But okay. So okay. Is it they're stalking these people out, or are they just randomly just trial and error until they get somebody who's just going to fall for this stuff?
It's random. It's random trial and error.
Really?
Yeah, they just dial numbers, you know. And, you know, think about it. If you dial numbers in the phone book, let's say, chances are that person is older because they got landline in the phone book. And younger people don't have landlines. They don't have cell. Plus, they're unlisted. I mean, they're not unlisted. They're public numbers. So Grandma and Grandpa don't want to spend an extra $6 a month with AT&T to delist the number, you know. So you're getting, the phone book is giving you basically, and the phone book is online now all over the world. You just go to anywho.com, and there's a phone book, a reverse directory, everything you need to figure out who lives where and what. You type in an address, and it gives you the phone number if that person has a listed phone number. So you can look up 4100 block of Magnolia Drive in Los Angeles, California, and pretty much figure out all the phone numbers of everybody on that block and just say, "Hey, you know, you're on Magnolia Drive. I just talked to Jerry Smith, who lives across the street from you, and I was telling him about," and that's how you start. And the Internet has made that all information available, so being a crook today, it pays well.
It really, and you know what, some of it, in my opinion, is just common sense, but, you know, common sense ain't created equal, I guess, but you said something in the book that I thought was like fascinating because I was surprised that people would be falling for this. But it was like you were saying in an email, never give anybody your bank. Basically, you said that your bank, your credit card company, or your financial institutions, like or even like the IRS, will never ask for your personal information via email.
Oh no, 100%, 100% of the time, 100% of the time. When you get a phone call from somebody, and in the conversation, no matter what it is, they ask you for your Social Security number, your date of birth, or your credit card number, that's 100% of the time a scam. 100% of the time when you get an email and you have to type in your Social Security number, your credit card, your date of birth, whatever, your name, your address, that's 100% of the time a scam. There's no 1%. So if you have a blanket rule that no matter how convincing the email is, it looks like your bank, it mentions your account number, it says, I don't care what, you never, ever fall for it. You always call the bank and say, "I just got this email, and is it true?" And if it's never true, it's never, ever true, you know? Because the criminals create a fictitious, there's ways to figure it out somewhat. Like, for example, when you get an email from a bank, it's supposed to be on an HTTPS.
Oh,
slash slash, because for S is for security, but the fakes sometimes don't have the S. HTTP without it, that means no security. That could be fake. But do you want to rest your whole financial future on an S? No.
Wow.
So you just don't want to give it to anybody. Now, when you go onto a bank website, you know, and you log in and you're working with your credit card, your checks, and all that's cool. That's good stuff. You know, I don't have a problem with that. But you know, any going along one step further, I hope everybody knows by now that we don't click on anything anymore, hardly ever, if we can avoid it. I actually, you know, when people now send you emails that you know about subjects that you have in common, and it says, hey, I've got party pictures from the party we went to last week, click here, and it's like a total scam, and it affects your whole company, and affects the government, if you're working for the government, that's a total scam. So we don't click on any stuff like that. What I tell people is I can't open attachments.
Oh.
Copy and paste whatever it is into an email or fax it to me at this number or mail it to me.
Oh, I love that. So you don't open any attachments via email?
Not from people that I don't know.
Okay.
And when they send me attachments at the newspaper, I just say I'm not opening it. So, because one time many years ago, I'd written a story about Ernie Pyle, the great columnist, and it was on the internet. And I got an email from somebody who said, hey, I'm a big fan of Ernie Pyle, and I've just done a term. I'm working on a term paper. Would you help me? And I said, sure. What do you need? And he wrote back. He said a couple questions, and I wrote back. Then about a month later, he sends me, okay, here's the email. Here's the link for the term paper. So I clicked on it, and it was a virus. It was a setup. He had targeted, you know, what I was interested in and worked me for a couple of emails and then sent me a virus.
Ow.
But my virus protector caught it.
Wow.
Thank goodness. But then I learned right then and there that people, it was that easy. And now on Facebook, all you have to do is go to somebody's Facebook page and see if they like Billy Crystal and Marvin Gaye and blah, blah, blah. And then write to them and go, I got pictures of Billy Crystal and Marvin Gaye together for you. I know you'd like it. And you click on it and boom. You're taking over, and what happens is your computer becomes a spy bot, and it becomes one of those little soldiers where the masters, whoever they are in Ukraine or whatever, they control your computer without you knowing it, and they use it to send out thousands of spam emails from your computer.
You know, one thing, speaking of computers, that I saw in the book that scared me, I'm still trying, you're going to have to explain this one so that they can get it, because I don't even think I can explain what I read in the book. It was something about people had some kind of way put their tax returns on a website, and then I couldn't even really get the gist of how could this have gone so wrong? So somebody legally downloads your tax return?
Yeah, there's a computer expert that I know of in Philadelphia. His name's Scott Green, and he has this business called MyComputerGuyScott.com. So he says to me, and he fixes people's computers. So he says to me, you know, I just discovered something, and I think you should tell people about it. I said, what? He said, when you do your tax return on your computer at home, and then you put it in a file so it can go be shared with the IRS when you're done, and you can file it, it stays in this shared folder. And
Whoa.
The shared folder is where your music might be that's shared. So he showed me, we went on the internet, and we Googled 1040 form, and we, on through the shared folders server, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we quickly found dozens of people, and we called up their income tax returns. And I got their phone numbers from, you know, those websites I tell you about. And I called them up, and I said, sir, you don't know me. I'm in Texas. I'm a columnist. You're in Boston, Massachusetts. But I'm writing a story about how people do this and don't realize it, and I want you to know that I have your tax return here. And I said, you know, I read him his tax return.
Freaked him out?
Well, a little bit. But, see, I didn't use these people's names in my story.
Okay.
You know, I just said he earned $55,000 and he donated $4,000 to his church, just to show how all the details were left.
Now, again, explain how they got their files or their 1040s linked with somebody else's 1040 when I'm on my home computer, they're on their home computer. How did the files come together?
Well, you have to turn off the shared component of your computer so that you don't share folders with the outside world, because you know the way music worked. People had songs on their system, and when someone wanted a song, the computer would link them through the server to get that music out of somebody else's computer. And you would go in literally into somebody else's computer in six states away without them knowing it, and you would download that song out of their computer, and you'd have that song. And so in those same folders where those songs were that people were sharing with each other were also the tax returns. And if we were to go do this right now, we would still find this today. We would be able to Google, and we'd be able to find tax returns in folders that were unintentionally shared by people through their home computers on these networks where file sharing happens. You know?
Wow. I mean, I just when I read it, my mouth flew open, and when you just explained it, my mouth flew open again because it just seems like you're so vulnerable. Even when you think you're being secure out there on the internet, you're still very vulnerable.
Oh, you're
if you're not computer savvy.
And if even if you are computer savvy, it doesn't matter. I mean, because whoever is doing it is more computer savvy than you, because this is what they do. They live for this, you know. And so it's nothing to be scared of, though, because if you have a virus protector on your computer, you know, and all that stuff, software and all, and you religiously update it and scan and make sure things are cool, you can stay out of trouble most of the time. Most ways, you shouldn't be scared of the computer. You should embrace it, you know. But then also, there's a I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, I'll move on. You come back to it when you remember it.
Yeah, no, Perry, I remember. It was just that you should think about having identity theft protection.
Oh. Now, is that like putting a credit alert on your Social Security number, you mean?
Yeah, it's like that, but you get other services, too, and it costs, you know, between $10 and $25 a month for you and your family, depending on what plan, what you get. But generally, they protect you from someone stealing your Social Security number or stealing your credit card number and buying stuff or stealing your identity, and they help you clean things up. But in my book, Watchdog Nation, I show the steps that you also do on your own real quickly in 24 hours to fix your identity theft problem, certain lists you get on, certain reports you file, certain things you do that so your butt's covered right away, you know?
You know, and Watchdog Nation, y'all, I'll be honest with you, I will keep that book forever. Because you know what, the thing is, it's so many things that we take for granted with the way that we're treated in these businesses. I mean, you know, we go in and we know that what just happened didn't feel right, and technically there should be somebody that we should be able to tell about it. But this book just gives you a guide to how to do it. I think I read something that I think I'll definitely use myself, because I'm trying to find how to reach the president of McDonald's as we speak, and mm-hmm. I found out who he is. He's Don Thompson, but I'm trying to figure out an email for him. And mm-hmm. you were saying that there's ways in which you can go on the internet and find out how to get the email address and the telephone number for CEOs of big companies. Explain how that's done.
Well, there's a couple of ways to do it. The first thing I would do would be I would start trying to find out the way the email was used at McDonald's. And it would be maybe @mcdonalds.com. And then I'd type in Google @mcdonalds.com and corporate. And then maybe I'd go to the corporate page of McDonald's and I'd go to the contact us and I'd see if there are any emails there. But I would just figure out, is it @mcdonalds.com or @mcdonalds.org or whatever. And then I'd look for the way some emails were done in Google. And I'd see, do they do the first letter like K and then the name Hines, H-I-N-E-S. Is that how you spell your name?
Yeah.
And then I would see their style. And then I would send the email to khines@mcdonalds.com. And I did this with Jeff Bezos. I couldn't solve a problem with Amazon about a month ago. So I sent an email to jeffbezos@amazon.com, jbezos@amazon.com, and jeff@amazon.com. And within a few hours, I got email back from none of those were rejected. All three went through, and I got an email back from someone purporting to work with him. And within about 36 hours, they really worked to fix a problem that I had spent 3 months struggling with going in as an average citizen, an average person in Amazon, you know, my new book and how it was going to appear and how it was going to be for sale by me and et cetera. So, you know, the owner of McDonald's, CEO, is not going to get your email using his name, probably, in 90% of the companies in America. In 5% or 10%, CEO is going to say, I'll take that email because I want to see what people send me, because it's my pulse on the public. But whoever reads it for him is going to take it and send it to the person who's actually supposed to respond to you and help you.
Okay.
You know, and that works a lot more. And the other thing is that these people like are members of clubs like Rotary Clubs and Kiwanis Clubs and Chambers of Commerce. And when you start Googling their name, you get the roster for that club. And not only is the guy's name listed as a member of the club, but his cell phone number is listed or whatever, you know. And I found people of companies that were filing bankruptcy and hiding from the press, you know, through the Rotary Club membership in their local hometown, you know, and I would just start calling them, and they always say the same thing, well, how'd you get my number? And I proudly told him, you know, from the Rotary, you know.
Okay. And it makes sense, though. I mean, because, you know, if they're thinking they're not vulnerable telling it to their Rotary Club as opposed to putting it out there on their company website or something, that makes sense.
Well, they don't know that the Rotary is going to put it in a public document like that, you know, because the Rotary doesn't really know what it's doing sometimes. It doesn't know to protect itself because it's a small club and it's got a website and it's a little complicated.
I love that. You know, one thing I loved in Watchdog Nation, y'all, and I'm going to keep repeating that book because y'all need to go get it. One thing you said in the book that I really agree with is that you say that when people are unhappy with you, they will on average tell about 9 or 10 people what happened. And,
yeah.
And that unhappy customers can run you out of business.
Yeah, there's a, one of the brightest minds in America is the president of High Point University in High Point, North Carolina. His name is Nito Cobain. And I quote him as saying that, you know, if you do a good job, they'll tell just a few. But if you do a bad job, they're going to tell 12. And those 12 are going to tell another 10. And that's true because when someone tells me a bad story about somebody, a car dealership or whatever, I do pass it on to other people. And when you hear it, it permanently changes your opinion of that business establishment. And that's a powerful tool to use. But you don't depend on word of mouth anymore to, like, get your point. Now you get action by posting on Twitter,
yeah,
you know, which I've done. You post something about a company that's bugging you on Twitter,
yeah,
and they snap up. And
yeah,
they're on it, man, because they don't want you. They don't want it going viral and everybody chiming in about how much they hate the company. So if it's a good company and they're trying to do the right thing, they will monitor Twitter and monitor Facebook and contact
really?
You and ask you if they can fix it quickly. And once they fix it, if you'll tell everyone that it was fixed.
Wow.
They have staff, you know. Like, I'm sure TXU, for example, and even Encore, your pet places, have social media people that monitor the feeds on what's said about TXU and Encore and can respond in real time.
I've already put it on Facebook, y'all, and trust me, I will be going to Twitter tonight now that I know that. One thing you said, too, in the book that I agree with, that if you have a happy customer, it's like having your own, or if you have happy customers, rather, it's like having your own advertising agency. If that is the case,
yeah,
why do companies not get that?
Well, it's not so much the companies don't get it, but the employees. They give up. They're not convinced. They don't play along with the game. I mean, they inculcate you in training when you go to work at Starbucks or the garage or wherever it is, how they want you to treat people. And I'm sure in the notebook that you read for the first week when you're in the orientation, it says here's how you treat people. But after a while, you know, people wear other people down, and you've been there for 5 years, and you forget all that stuff, and you get a little gruffy, and you don't know that the person that's, you know, right there in front of you is Carrie Hines from Blog Talk Radio, or Dave Lieber from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, and you don't know. It could be a mystery shopper paid for by the company that they send in people to check your attitude and everything.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a critic, you know, for a restaurant, a review site, a website, you know, who's going to write about it. You just don't know who it is. And now you got websites like Yelp where anybody at any time can leave any store and say, the service in there really stunk, and it goes on the Internet, and it kind of stays there.
And you know what? And that is so true, because I went to Neiman Marcus this week, y'all. Trust me, I don't have
the
budget for Neiman Marcus in there this week. And the service just really sucked.
Really?
And I remember leaving out of there thinking exactly what you just said. They didn't even know if I was a secret shopper or not. And I couldn't even believe that's the level. I mean, the customer service was just the worst I'd ever seen. They didn't even acknowledge you were in the building. And so I was leaving the building thinking, do they think mystery shoppers never come in here or secret shoppers? I just found that totally fascinating that they didn't even seem to it wasn't even on the radar that they cared. And I just found that amazing because so often people who are in business, you know, people may not ever say anything to you about how poor the service was, but they leave there and they go and tell everybody else. Most people are never going to complain like I'll complain, trust me.
And the founder of that store, Stanley Marcus, he died just a couple of years ago, and he was one of the great customer service actors of the 20th century. And,
wow.
You know, when people leave the company, like Sam Walton leaves Walmart, or Disney leaves Disney, you know, the company suffers.
Yeah.
And it's hard for people to remember One company, though, that survived, my favorite one that I mentioned in the book, is L.L. Bean.
And mm-hmm,
L.L. Bean, you know, will return. You can return something you bought there 8 years ago.
Wow.
And you can say, look, you bought it with us 8 years ago, and look what happened. There's a hole in the butt now in this bathrobe. And they will take the bathrobe back, and they will send you a new one. And they don't ask questions about it. There's a hole in it. And L.L. Bean said, you know, my customer comes first, and he's always got to be satisfied. And if he isn't, there's something wrong with this place, because without him, we don't have a reason to exist.
You said in the book, too, that you don't go to the media first. You go to the company first with your complaint. And you make certain that you have exhausted all options before you take it to the media, because you don't want to go just sounding like a whiner to the media that they didn't do me right. You do want to say that I called this person and then I asked for a supervisor and I did this. All the checks and balances have been done
mm-hmm.
before you try to take your complaint to the media.
And then here's a trick. You got a power sheet that I talked about, that blank sheet of paper that you filled out with the name and the ID number and the date and the time you talked to them and who they were and where they were and what their job title was and what they told you, and that's your power sheet. You only really make three calls to a company. The first call is to the first person, then you try again when it doesn't work to the second person, then the third time you ask for the supervisor, you know, and you play that card.
See, that's not how I deal with it. I'm so glad you taught me something, because when I get you on the phone and I tell the first level, let's just say that's the person who answers the phone, what the situation is, and they seem clueless on how to fix it, mm-hmm. I immediately say, give me a supervisor. You know, because it's like, why waste time with a person? Someone said a long time ago, why waste time with a person who can't even solve your problem?
Okay, you're exactly right. But here's the trick. Before you talk to the supervisor, you have to do something. You have to find their point of vulnerability on your problem. And so it's the one thing about your problem that the company doesn't want you to know. 100 people have the same exact problem. 99 of them call up and complain and yell and scream, and they get nothing. The one person who looks it up on the internet and finds out the point of vulnerability and says that to the supervisor wins the game. And the point of vulnerability is always one of four things. There's a media report like mine or a TV station that did a story, and you can click and watch it or read it. There's an attorney general investigation in one of 50 states. There's a class action lawsuit going on from California, or there's a state investigation going on from your home state out of your state capital, one of the state agencies. Some companies like Direct Buy, which is a buying network thing, they have all four of those points of vulnerabilities if you look it up on the internet before you went in there and they ask you to spend $5,000 on a program. You can spend $5,000 on a program, but you need to know that all four of those points of vulnerability exist for that particular company before you go in. But most people don't. But then you talk to the supervisor on the phone. You read her from your power sheet. You say, I talked to Sheila. I talked to Elvis. Now you're my last call to this company. I have your name. I have your number. I want you to know, Supervisor Smith in Atlanta, Georgia, that I'm taping this call for customer quality control. And if you can't help me solve this problem, I'm taking it to the, and then you name the point of vulnerability. To the Attorney General of Utah, which I see is doing an investigation, to the the columnist at the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, Dave Lieber, who I see wrote about it, and you just read to them what it was that you found because you looked, and they back off because you're the one out of 100 that knows how to squeeze them. Because
and you know what? And
trouble.
I used Dave's tip on a call today with I hate to mention their name again on car, and in the phone conversation. I waited until the very end of the conversation to use that tip Dave just said, and I said, oh, and by the way, I did tape record this conversation, and I was tape recording, and he says, oh, I didn't give you permission to tape record the conversation.
Well,
and I said, well, I don't think I gave you permission to tape record the conversation we're having. And, of course, he swore that we weren't being tape recorded, which I know that wasn't true, but...
Yeah.
Was I supposed to tape record him without telling him in advance?
Well, under the law in Texas, and all you have to do is go to Google and type in wiretapping law in New Jersey, if you live in New Jersey and you want to know the answer to this. But in Texas, you don't have to tell the other party. You can
really?
Just, as long as one party knows the tape is on, and that would be you because you're taping. So you complied with Texas law, okay?
Hey,
and the fact that you told the guy that, you didn't even have to tell him, but you were being a nice, responsible person. Now, I tell people beforehand,
do
and if they say to me, you know, I'm not allowed to talk to you because you're taping the call, then I'll ask to talk to a supervisor. And if that doesn't work, I'll hang up and then I'll call again and I won't tell the person I'm taping them. But I only tape the calls which are real problem companies. You know, I don't tape the average call where, you know, I'm just trying to get something done with the company the first time. I use that tape recorder as an intimidator to let them know that they're taping me and I'm taping them.
Well, Mr. Flores, I wasn't trying to intimidate you. I was just trying to get my facts straight. So when I take it a step further, I can remember exactly what you said. But I'm just
right,
saying.
Because they always they'll listen to the tape about you, but they won't let you listen to it.
Exactly.
So while they have a tape of the conversation and you don't have a tape of the conversation, you're at a disadvantage in the power balance that we're trying to strike, a 50-50 equality between you and them.
That's all I'm saying, Mr. Flores, and that's exactly what I did. But you said another thing you said. You said when you take your story to the media always likes a story about a victim, a villain, or a hero. So as long as you're one of them, you're likely to get your story in the newspaper or get your story done on a show or something.
Well, even before you take the story to the media, there's one more card to play in your hand that's really powerful.
Okay.
If your complaint is with Encore and you're about to go to the media, then you go to Encore, and then you go to media. You type in the search box media relations, and it shows there that there's a phone number that you can call, or an email that you can send, or whatever it is at that particular company that they allow reporters to contact them, and that will put you in with their PR manager. And you write a note, an email to the PR manager, or you leave a voicemail message, and it's non-threatening, and you just lay out the facts, and you just say, "Look, my mama always taught me to give people second chances. And I just listened to Blog Talk Radio with Dave Lieber and his book, Dave Lieber's Watchdog Nation. And he said if anybody had a problem, they could contact him at watchdognation.com, and he'd try and figure out a way that they could help themselves solve the problem." And I figured, you know, before I go to the press, before they run the risk of there being a big story or something in the newspaper, I'll tell you what my problem is. And this way, it doesn't have to go anywhere except between us. So if you would just forward this on, and if I could get action by May 15th, I would appreciate that. Sincerely yours, John Q. Public. Now, the guy that gets that, it's his job to make sure there are not any negative stories in the newspaper. So if he ignores that and his boss finds out later and the story comes out, he had a chance to put the fire out and he didn't, he's in trouble. If he takes it and he passes on to consumer relations and he says, "Could you please look into this?" and they find out they did something wrong and they help the person, it all is taken care of quietly without anybody being involved in the newspaper or anything. So you have the ability to let them know as a courtesy before you contact the media that you're giving them a final chance to actually treat you like a human being.
Well, y'all listen, Encore. Dave Lieber's on my show tonight. But you know what? I skipped that step. I'm sorry, I missed that in the book. I skipped that step. But you know, the thing is, it became so frustrating that really, you know, even before really worrying about the media, I immediately knew this was a situation that needed. It's one of those situations that sometimes there's safety in numbers, and I just really feel like until the whole world sees how many people are being affected by this, mm-hmm. then there's not going to be change to this situation. So I think really with a million signatures and a class action lawsuit, I think really we're going to get a better picture mm-hmm. of just how bad this problem is. Mm-hmm. And I really just beg to differ with you, Dave. I don't think it's 1%. I think it's a whole lot bigger. But we won't argue about that. We won't argue about that. If you just tuned in, you've come center stage tonight for the topic, Buyer Beware or Be Scammed. We're talking with author, international speaker, and Fort Worth Star Telegram's investigative columnist, Dave Lieber. He's teaching us everything we need to know to keep us from being scammed. Tonight's segment of Center Stage is being brought to you by African American News and Commentary Blog, your single source for news, events, and commentary that is of unique interest to African Americans. They're located on the web at www.AfricanAmericanNewsAndCommentary.com. Okay, y'all, before we move on and start talking about Dave's second book, if you want to ask him how to keep from being scammed on a situation that you're dealing with, you're going to need to get on the phone line because we have about 7 more minutes in this segment, and then we're going to talk about his new book called Bad Dad. But there were so many things that I saw that I want to try to mention before this 7 minutes is up. You know, the website you refer to, www.zoominfo.com, can you tell them that's back to getting the executives' emails and telephone numbers? We did not put that website out there earlier, but that's what that does, right, at zoominfo.com?
Okay. Yeah, and I'm going to answer this all these questions really quickly so that you can ask as many as possible in the remaining minutes.
Okay.
I give the website zoominfo.com as a place to find out the names of executives, their addresses, where the company's based, so you can help figure out who they are and how to get to them. But then also there's LinkedIn. And if you're not a member of LinkedIn, it's free, and you just sign up with your email and you create a password, and all of a sudden you're in the network. And then you can start searching industries and companies, and pretty much everybody in a company is on LinkedIn who you'd ever need to talk to, their titles. And you can start, once you get their name and their title, you can start searching them, you know, and you can find people through LinkedIn, LinkedIn.com.
Absolutely. So you know what, because there's so much more. I mean, my notes, I'll never get to all this. You know, basically, in these last 6 minutes or so in this segment, tell us things, you know, that maybe I missed that's important for people to know to keep from being scammed.
Well, okay, if I were just giving out a few basic rules, you know, I'm referring to what I said. You would never click on any links or attachments on emails, really, that could possibly be risky, and no matter how good they look, you might want to send an email back to the person saying, before I clicked on this link that you sent me, was it legitimate? And they'll either write back yes or no. And it's not going to kill you if you have to wait a day or two to get an answer, or you can call them on the phone. The alternative to that, of course, is, you know, getting an infection and getting a virus, and that you might lose all your stuff. So everybody that has a computer and that keeps all their stuff on a computer, or they keep all their data on a phone, you need to back that stuff up. You have to assume your computer is going to get wiped out. You have to assume your phone, you know, is going to get lost or stolen, and you have to back it up all the time, because it's simple now with a push button. You spend $40 or $50 in the store to get the backup drive, and it's a push button thing, and it might do it automatically, and they give a lot of space, and so you got to protect your data, you know. And of course, on your computer, you got to have spyware and antivirus and all that, but you also got to use it and update it and click on it every few weeks and scan, update and scan it and do all that. And you got to have a firewall. And when you don't want to ever deal with people that come to your door, no matter what it is, unless it's the Girl Scout or the Boy Scout from around the corner. I mean, it's just not worth the trouble, because they're up to no good most of the time, and let them go on to somebody else. Before you buy anything these days, you have to Google it. And you have to look up the model number, the name of the product, and type in, say, Frigidaire Model 91C3R and Problems and Best Buy, just to pick a store at random. I don't have any problems with Best Buy. They fix things I send them to from people, so I'm not picking on them. But that's how I would look up and see if that refrigerator came from a bad factory in China. You know, before I hire a lawyer or doctor, I'd want to see if that lawyer or doctor has been sued for malpractice, or they've had suspensions on their record with the state medical board or the state bar. Because if there's a problem later and you look up the lawyer's name on the Internet, you'll find out maybe they've been convicted of something. And, you know, that might explain why they took your money and you never heard from them again. So just by Googling their name and spending 5 minutes, you'll find out if this is a person you really want to do business with, not because a friend of a friend recommended.
And I think you said on when you're doing these Google searches as well, that you don't just look for the first thing. You kind of search through those several search engines. You don't just go with the first thing you find about the business. You look through quite a few posts about it on the Internet.
Well,
is that what
well,
I'm
going to Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's a pet peeve of mine. What a lot of these dishonest companies are doing is they stack the searches. So the first 3 to 4 pages, if you type in scam and ripoff, they're saying, why our business is not a scam or a ripoff, and it's all about them, but it's positive. So you have to drill really deep. You might have to go to the 8th page or the 12th page or the 14th page before you get rid of all the crap that they put up there to throw you off. And with Google, you know, you just hit number 8 or number 11 or number 12 on the bottom of the page, and it only takes you a second. So don't get impatient. Don't give up. Don't quit looking. If you're about to spend $1,000 on something, you can spend 15 minutes doing this, so that you don't have to write me a letter and ask me to intervene, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think you gave a good tip, too, when you said whenever you're doing business with someone, or they need to have more than just a P.O. box.
Yeah, they
need
to have
an address.
Street.
Or is that how it went?
Yeah, you want to have a storefront. I mean, if you're going to get a garage door opener, which is an industry in America that is crooked, because if you call garage doors, they go to 1-800 numbers in call centers elsewhere, but yet in the Yellow Pages they're listed like they're the local garage door opener company, and so they're running and they come out to your house and they give like these really high prices, and then they charge even more than they said they were going to charge, versus little garage door guy around the corner who's on 1212 Front Street, who you drive by every day. Chances are, you know, you can find him. He's there. He's not going to hurt you. And if he does, you know where he is. But these other ones that, like, pretend that they're local, but they're not, they just use P.O. boxes. So if you don't have a physical address, you know, and you can go to Google Earth now and type in the physical address that they listed and find out that it's an empty lot or whatever, you know. So if you get suckered in by that, you know, it's your fault because you hired someone off a Yellow Page ad, and that's the worst way to hire someone now because the Yellow Pages have become a haven for these gangsters to ply their wares, you know.
So if you're going to, I guess the best tip then would be if you're going to make a major purchase, before you pull out your checkbook, you really do need to do your homework.
Yeah, if I were about to make a major purchase, like some people renovate their homes and spend 10, 20, 30 grand, I'd actually go down to the courthouse in the county where I live, and I'd go through the civil case file and check out the name of the owner and his company, and I'd see if anybody else had sued him for, and if he had one lawsuit, I'd read it and see what happened, and then I'd ask him about it. Now, another way to test people that really works really well is if you're sitting in a room and they promise you they'll give you a cruise, and you're sitting in a room and they do a 90-minute presentation, and they tell you that you have to sign up right then and there, $5,000, but wait a minute, I like you, it's $4,000. Wait a minute, I'll give it to you for $3,000, but the person over there next to you is paying $8,000. You tell the guy, look, I'll sign this, but maybe tomorrow, because I want to go home and talk to my children about it, my financial advisor, and my lawyer. And if they say no, so one-time deal, you take it or leave it, you never, ever sign. Because if they don't want you to talk to your lawyer about it or other people in your family and it's a one-time deal, no matter what the price is, it's a scam.
So if it's high-pressure sales, you really pretty much need to walk away. If you can't make the decision tomorrow, then you probably should make the decision today.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Y'all heard it here, y'all. That's Dave Leeper telling y'all about what's in Watchdog Nation, y'all. Like I told y'all, it's a coffee table book for every home. That's all I can tell you. I learned so much. I will have that book forever. Now we're going to move on. We're going to talk about Dave's new book that he has out called Bad Dad. And this is basically telling about the worst 10 minutes of your life. What happened?
Well, yeah, I guess people listening to us talk here, they know that I'm kind of a guy that sometimes takes no prisoners. So when I got to Texas in the early 90s, I was a sharp investigative columnist guy, and I used to write about all kinds of government, school boards, city councils, mayors, police chiefs, fire departments.
Whoa.
And I'd hold them to account. And there was this one particular local police department. Over a dozen years, I had written many, many stories about them. And they weren't favorable. They were about things they had done. A police chief he lost his job on the first day because I exposed that he had a false education.
Wow.
And corporals and sergeants who got suspended, I'd write about them. And people that made mistakes that broke laws. And the council was recalled in that town in part because of things I'd written. And everyone always told me don't speed through that town, you know. So I took that advice pretty seriously, but...
Now, how close was this town to where you lived?
It's right across the street. I live on the border of Fort Worth, and this town is right across the street from me.
Oh, God.
So I'm in it all the time. And
okay.
I took my son, who was 11 years old, and I took him to McDonald's across the street in this town. And this was in August of 2008, and he was acting up like an 11-year-old boy can do, and he was in a rush. He wanted to leave, and I told him to settle down, and I said, if you don't settle down, you're walking home. It's a 15-minute walk, about 7 blocks or so, across the street into our neighborhood subdivision. And he wouldn't. So I just said, okay, dude, you're walking home.
Wow.
And, you know, my parents did that to me, and
yeah.
People do that every day. Well, I drove up the road, and I drove back, and 10 minutes went by, and I went over to McDonald's, and I looked for him walking, and I didn't see him. And then I pulled into McDonald's, and there were two police cars there from that police department. So I hadn't been caught speeding, but I had been caught telling my kid to walk home from McDonald's. And it turned out, I wrote a story about it in the paper explaining what happened, and I called the parenting center and talked about the things I learned. And just if I make mistakes, I write about them in the paper, and then I learn from them so other people can learn too. And you don't really want your kid to walk home anymore, these police officers told me, because it's so dangerous, and in those 10 minutes something terrible could have happened to him.
Was it broad daylight or is it nighttime? What time of day?
It was 10:30 in the morning, you know, and it. So they ended up arresting me and charging me with a felony of abandonment and a felony of endangerment. And it became a viral story that spread around the world about whether I was a good parent or a bad parent. And
everybody was writing about you now.
Yeah, everybody was writing about me, and I was Inside Edition wanted to interview me in ABC News, and on Fox News they debated whether I was a good dad or a bad dad, and it went on, and you know, I was looking at going to prison, and my career was just about going down the tubes. And so I decided when it was all over that I would write a book about it, and I'd just tell the story about what it's like to raise a boy in America today and try and raise him, and also try and be honest and truthful about what happens in government, in the newspaper, and sometimes those worlds collide. And it's a thriller. It's all true, but it's about that part of our society today where things do go viral every day, small things that go crazy on the internet, and sometimes they ruin people's lives and sometimes they don't, but it's a power that didn't exist. And it's also about how you act the way you did when you were a child, when you were an adult. I think the same things that made me act rash as a child, it's led me to make a snap decision that day at McDonald's, and I did it with my son, who is a mirror image of myself, you know. And I love him to death, and he's just like me. And so there's a lot of stuff to talk about, and a lot of people can relate to it because everybody's told
this. Well, I guess, for the audience who has not, you know, maybe read the book, I don't see anything wrong with the story so far. So I'm trying to figure out how did this become, was there major thoroughfares that the child had to cross over to get home, or
there was a road there that's tough to cross, but there is a walk path on it, and there is a green pedestrian light.
Okay.
And once he would have crossed that street on a green light, he would have been home in about, we timed it, he and I one time walked it was 14 minutes.
Okay.
But you know, we live in a world today where you can't tell your kid to get out of the car and walk home, because if someone calls the police, you will be arrested, and that happens all the time now. And we live in a world today where you can't spank your kid in the supermarket anymore or the grocery store, because people are going to get mad at you and they're going to feel bad for that child. And, you know, if they see the teacher or the nurse sees that child with a bruise in school, they have to call the police by law. The police have to come in and they have to send Child Protective Services to your house. And they have to look after the well-being of the child. And I don't have a problem with that, you know. I think that's good that we take care of the least protected people in our society, our children. And for me to do that, you know, I think that's beneath my standards. I shouldn't have told my kid to walk home. I shouldn't have made a rash decision. But I did. And sometimes the worst 10 seconds, 2 minutes of your life are decisions that change you and affect you forever. And through these things.
I mean, I can really see both sides of the argument. Mm-hmm. But I don't see that, nothing came. He never left the parking lot, it doesn't seem like. So did he ever leave the McDonald's parking lot?
No, because people called 911.
Oh, they heard the conversation.
Well, they claimed to have heard the conversation, but they misquoted it in the police reports. They said that I cursed at him, which I didn't. They said that I told him to do things, which I didn't. Because people hear and see different things. And some of the witness reports made it sound like he was going to get run over by the car when I pulled out.
Wow.
One said that he bounced off the car, and he didn't. But, you know, if you hear that he bounced off the car, that's a scary thing. He was pulling on the handle, and once he realized I was backing out and I was going to let him walk home, he just stepped away.
Oh.
But that's okay. He's 11, and he goes up to the guy. The man comes up to him, and he says to the man, you know, I don't know, you know, I was bad, I was wrong there, I was mean to my dad in the restaurant. And the man rightfully said, no, son, you know, no matter how bad you are or whatever, your father should never do that to you. And I can't disagree with that sentiment from that man at that time, you know. But my parents had told me to walk home when I was a child, and I'd have to walk home Broadway in Manhattan during the 60s, which was pretty dangerous. And when my parents would tell me to walk home, somebody on the street would say to me, you go walk home now, and when you get home, you apologize to your parents, and that's no way for a young man to act. And that was how it was in 1965. And now we live in stranger danger land, and we have a whole different mentality about parenting and hyper-parenting and helicopter parenting that, you know, there were enough people out there that said that what I had done was cruel, an unusual punishment, I should lose my job, I should lose my career, I should be convicted. And they honestly believe that, you know.
Anybody in McDonald's know who you were?
The McDonald's people, no, nobody knew who I was, except the police.
Okay, gotcha.
They were checking in with the big guy, the chief, You know, as soon as I drove back and I saw those two police cars there from that town, and I thought about every story I'd ever done, I knew I was in deep trouble.
Did they harass you at all?
Nope. Nope. They were very professional.
But you know,
I kind of think that if it happened in the next town over, they would have told the police chief or whoever would have said, you know, you shouldn't be telling your kid to walk home. You really maybe need to go take a parenting class, or have you ever thought about going to take a little counseling or about temper? And, you know, but this is a family dispute. We're going to let it. Nobody was hurt here. We're just going to let you go on. Instead, you know, they're arguing about me in Australia and in France and in England. And, you know, it becomes a cause celeb.
You know, now what I find interesting is that what sounds like a very tough time in your life. Why would you go back and relive all that and write it in a book? I don't get it.
Well, because I'm a speaker, and what we do in our speaking profession is we learn from our failures and our mistakes and our weak moments, and we help other people become better and live their lives better so they don't make the same mistakes we do, and we help lift them up. And you know, it's an inspiring story, and it's also a telling story about our time, and it's also amazingly true. And it's a great story. It's the best thing I've ever written in my life. And that's what I am. I'm a professional storyteller, and I tell stories about things that actually happened, and I tell them as close to 100% accuracy as I can. You know, I use tapes, and I don't rely on my memory. I use tapes and notes and things, and I approached it like a real journalist should. And almost, how could I not tell this story, really?
It just seems to me, though, I guess, like I said, I can see it from both sides, because if your child had, you know, been allowed to continue and you did nothing, the same people in the restaurant would have been saying, what a poor dad over there letting his child be misbehaving in McDonald's. You know, why doesn't he make that child behave? So, you know, you can't win today with kids. I mean, because, you know, the public, you know, if they're misbehaving, it's your fault. And then if you reprimand them, it's your fault.
Yeah. Well, there's a chapter in my book that looks at parenting in the 21st century, and that's what it touches on, you know. And it, you know, it's different today. If you've ever been to a youth game where your kid is between the ages, say, 7 and 14, and they're playing soccer or football or basketball or baseball, the parents pretty much are acting pretty miserable. And they're yelling at the ref or the umpire, and they're calling them names, and they're yelling at them in the parking lot. And it's just kind of horrible to watch, you know, the involvement that – and in this particular case with me, you know, I guess I'm a member of what's called the Free Range Kids Movement. And that's led by a woman named Lenore Skenazy, who told her child, who was 9 years old, that he could ride the subway one time. He wanted to learn how to do that. And so she gave him money, and he got on the subway, and he rode the subway. When I was 9 years old, growing up, I read the subway, too. Nobody thought twice about it. But now it's a different world. And so she was criticized and called America's worst mom. And now she's got this book called The Free Range Kids, and she leads this movement, which is we need to give our kids more space. They need to walk home. They need to be able to play outside baseball with their friends. And, you know, and we don't necessarily have to coddle them, because if you're in a safe neighborhood and your kid has the tools to do what's right and knows how to not talk to people and knows how to get help when you need it, knows how to run and really get street smart, you know, you prepare your kid for life that way. And that's a debate going on in society now between one group of parents and the other over in that judgmental tone that you're talking about, where people get kind of irate over other people's parenting skills. You know, it's
a
hot
button. What comes to mind, though, is recently, and I thought it was odd, that a 16-year-old was allowed to sail across the world in a boat by herself.
Yes, look what happened. Remember, it was terrible.
Yeah, it was terrible, but my point is, and that's where I'm going with that, but nobody said that was against the law. No police came out. As a matter of fact, everybody was hoping that the 16-year-old was able to make it, which was crazy.
Here's something, though. That's over international waters. And now, if you could see, like if a parent said that they wanted to go to the New River Gorge Bridge in West Virginia, where people jump off that bridge on a rope. I forget what you call it, but, you know, they jump and that...
Bungee jumping?
Bungee jumping, right. So if someone said, you know, I got a 6-year-old child and I'm going to let him bungee jump, or I've got a 3-month-old infant and I'm going to let him bungee jump, the authorities in West Virginia would step in and they'd say, no, we're not going to allow that. That's cruelty to children and blah, blah, blah. But international waters, whose jurisdiction is it? There is nobody over the ocean that is in charge. So what police force are going to come and
But she leaves, you know, here in the United States heading toward international waters, doesn't she?
Yeah,
she
but
leave.
I don't know that it would be against the law for a 16-year-old to sail by herself in United States coastal waters, because it happens all the time. Kids go sailing by themselves. They're in contests and they're training and they're getting certified and, you know, they're 12 years old.
That's my point. I guess what I'm trying to say is your kid can't walk 15 minutes to the house without you getting arrested, but somebody can let their child sail in. That's crazy.
What about that parent that put their kid in that little fake rocket ship, you know, remember a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
And that dad, it was for a publicity stunt for a reality TV show, and he went to prison for a while because of that, remember?
I do. And the kid was never gone anywhere. The kid was hiding.
Right. He was hiding under some truck or something like that. Yeah.
You know, we keep doing such strange things with the laws. You know, they arrest one parent for trying to put her child in a better school. You know, so it really just kind of depends upon what laws you're under, because Texas may have one thing and Virginia may have another. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I just think that what they did to you was extreme. I do.
Well, thank you. But, you know, life goes on and you pick yourself up and you learn from it, and then you remind everybody that, you know, if you step out of line – everything is on video now. Everybody has a phone camera, and there's video cameras everywhere. And you being on Fox News with the 20-second video where they show you acting up in the cafe, it's just you're 20 seconds away from that, you know. And so people just have to remember to take a deep breath before they get irate about something. You know, just imagine the camera's on you.
Right.
Chill. Relax.
How bad did your son feel when everything was over?
Well, it was traumatic. I mean, my whole family was upset because I came within a week or just a few days, really, of losing my whole newspaper career. I was suspended by the paper, you know.
Really?
And I was just, it was going away right before my eyes.
So what turned everything around?
Well, I did what, you know, you're supposed to do when you get into a bad situation. What I've learned in Watchdog Nation is you immediately find out what's going on, you figure it out, you get bearings on it, you work it out, you come up with scenarios. I went out and hired a great lawyer, and I just told him everything I could about everything, and he went to work on it.
Wow.
And he proved to the prosecutor that it didn't rise to the level of what abandonment in Texas is, when you leave a baby on a doorstep or you leave a child in a hot field, and endangerment is when you leave a child in a hot car.
Right.
And I didn't do that to him. He wasn't hurt. And so they just
He never
stopped.
Left the parking lot, so I guess he may have been across the major street or something and almost got hit by a car. You know, but the fact that you came back in 10 minutes, to me, all of that should have been, like, mute. Okay, well, he's back. So, you know, we can't arrest him because he's here. It's no different than you said, I'm going to go home and I'll be right back. I mean, I know you would have had to lie to say that, but I just don't see where the issue was if he never crossed that street and never in danger.
Well, we have people that are doing this all the time in different places that are getting arrested for telling their kid to walk home, you know, leaving them by the side of the road and telling them to walk home. So I would generally say that in matters now involving these kinds, just make the assumption that wherever you are, whatever you're doing, if the police come to your house for who someone else calls them, you're going to get in trouble, because there are so many laws over so many things now that are now considered illegal that weren't years ago, that were just part of life growing up, you just have to assume that the prank, the toilet papering a house, the toilet papering a tree, is now illegal. It's criminal mischief. It could be vandalism. Okay?
Yeah, didn't they call it rolling the house or whatever?
Yeah.
Is that what
and
it's called?
Ding-dong ditch.
Yeah.
You know, where you ring the doorbell and you jump in the ditch, which is something that every boy in America probably grew up doing. It is illegal. I know a child who actually was picked up by the police a couple of weeks ago for ding-dong ditching. And so you just – and, you know, kids today get arrested because if they were using a kitchen knife in their kitchen over the weekend and it somehow fell into their vehicle and they drive to school with a knife – and the school has a zero tolerance policy. Yeah, it was just a knife I was using when I cut my dinner last night, and I, you know, they could. I've written stories about how they suspend you or send you alternative school because you're carrying a knife into school.
So, let me ask you this: Are we sending a message to the audience that you cannot reprimand a child at all?
Oh, if you reprimand your child and you spank your child and he goes to school and he says to the nurse, "My daddy spanked me last night," and the nurse says, "Let me see where," and he pulls down his pants and shows on his backside like a black hand mark, the nurse is obligated most places to call the police and call Child Protective Services in. Daddy gets a call at work saying, "Would you please come down? You know, we have your son. We have physical." They've taken a picture of the bruise. Then they'll do an investigation and find out if this is a pattern or this is an aberration, and that dad will never spank his son again. And oftentimes that son will say, "You can't spank me because if you do, I'll call the cops." And that's a common problem in America today.
Wow.
And kids know that they can call the cops on their parents, and neighbors know that they can call on other neighbors and make up stories about them abusing their kids. And the world is littered with people who've had Child Protective Services come to their house for quote-unquote misunderstandings.
I think I would venture to say that if someone saw a child being reprimanded by the parent, if I were you, before I called the police, I would really make very, very sure that I saw what I thought I saw. You know what I mean? Because, you know, you're probably the same person that will be, you know, upset in the grocery store when some kid is running all over your feet because the parents can't control them. So, you know, I think there's a fine line between, you know, beating a child and reprimanding a child. And I don't think I want to live in a world where the parents can't reprimand the children. I mean, I'm sorry. That scares me, period, to think of children pretty much raising themselves, because I think they need to be corrected at certain points. So I don't know what to think of what happened to you, Dave, because, I mean, it really scares me to think that, you know, on no level you can touch them, on no level you can say, okay, you know, I'm going to do this to show you that what you did was wrong. I mean, there's no checks and balances anymore, it seems, for kids. They can do what they want to do, but
no, we
you
have
as
different,
a parent
no,
have
no,
no right.
Well, we have different ways now to leverage them than we did before. So now more effective than the spank
mm-hmm.
is something else.
What, take away a cell phone?
Yeah, you cut off their internet access or you cut off their cell phone. And they can't breathe. You have taken away their oxygen. They would rather get 10 paddles on the rear, you know, hurt like heck, than give up that cell phone or that internet connection. And that's a more powerful punishment today.
If you told your son, "I'm going to take away your cell phone," that would be like taking away his oxygen.
It is.
Are you
serious? And for all his other friends, too, because if you think about it, when you see your children, they have a cell phone in their hand and they're looking at it. And it's their body part now. It's connected to them. And when you take it away, they forget how to function because everything they do, they suddenly can't do anymore. They're the first generation that's ever had this problem. And it's not only a problem for them, it's a problem for adults, it's a problem for everybody, but it's also a power over them. It's the one thing they care about most in life. And, you know, if you take it away from them for a few days, they pretty much will do anything to get it back. And that includes engaging in very good behavior.
That is just scaring me. I'm sorry, y'all. I don't have kids, so I can't even relate to what he's saying. I mean, I'm trying, but it's like way over my head that's all you got. I mean, between you and making a child behave as a cell phone or a computer, that's just, you know. And I really believe you. I'm just saying.
That's the most effective tool. That's tool number one.
Wow.
Because that's what they care about most, you know.
So in the old days,
they take away your daddy took away your TV. You know, when I was a kid, you know, you can't watch TV for 24 hours.
Well, you can't
go to the fair. You can't go to the fair, you know, with your friends because you misbehave. They ground you. We still ground our kids all the time, of course. But,
I agree.
You know, that's not as powerful.
No, not, I guess it's not. What ended up happening with the police department? Did they apologize to you?
They're not in the apology department. I basically don't hold any grudges against them because, you know, I left myself vulnerable. But you forgot where you were. No, they knew exactly who I was.
I said you forgot where you were.
Oh, sorry.
That you were in their city when you told them to walk home.
That's the scary thing. I didn't forget where I was. I just made one of those mistakes in judgment. I knew exactly where I was and what I was doing, but I wasn't thinking clear enough, and I wasn't taking a deep breath, and I wasn't holding back. And I, you know what I also did? I put myself in a personal situation where I took it all personally.
Yeah.
And as a parent, you know, we've got to understand that it's not really personally at us. It's the situation they're in, and they're just taking it out on us, and to, like, make more of an emotional detachment from it.
Yeah. Because, you know, we forget that when you're 13 and 15 or whatever, your hormones are so all over the page. You're like a crazy person.
Right. And I try not to forget that, you know, because that's really important. I remember what it was like when I was his age and the way I felt. And
you thought you knew everything.
He does better. He's doing better at his age than I did at his age, you know.
Yeah.
He's got it more together than I did.
So, Dave, tell us, if somebody wants to get you as a motivational speaker, how do they reach you?
Well, I got a website called YankeeCowboy.com.
Okay.
And
YankeeCowboy.com?
Yeah, because I come from Manhattan and I live in Texas.
Okay. And so if they want to get the books, Dave Lever's Watchdog Nation or Bad Dad, how do they get those books?
There's a store on YankeeCowboy.com. There's also WatchdogNation.com, and that leads to the same store.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also BadDadBook.com, which
mm-hmm.
leads to the store, which is YankeeCowboy.com/store.
Okay,
so just go to YankeeCowboy.com.
No,
just go to YankeeCowboy.com and hit store.
Okay.
And, but if you want to learn more about Watchdog Nation, you just go to WatchdogNation.com. And if you want to learn more about Bad Dad, you go to BadDadBook.com.
Okay. Okay, and in closing, just kind of give us a refresher of what all we learned today about not to get scammed.
I had fun. Thank you for having me. I really had a great time. The main thing I just want everybody to remember, two things. Google everything before you buy it or hire people, and that will save you most of the time from an obvious mistake that you'll regret later.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have a Google box, I call it the magic Google box at home, just call the local librarian and ask him or her to Google it for you and then call you and tell you the results. And that's free because you pay taxes to those people to do this job for you, but you have to remember to do it, you know?
Okay, that's wonderful. Well, wow, y'all, that's going to be it.
Okay.
I had a great time, Dave. I learned so much. I kid you not, y'all. I think I learned so much from the book. I even learned more tonight. It was an absolute great show. Thank you so much, Dave, for being my guest. And again, y'all, go get the book Watchdog Nation from Dave Lever and the new book he's got called Bad Dad. Also, a reminder, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage or the host. And on next week, y'all, that will be September 2nd. We're going to be talking about Encore and their smart meter, and we're going to get a lot of experts on this show because I want to be 100% certain I got them right, and I think I have. And we're going to be talking about that next week. So, again, thank you, Dave, for being my guest. Thank you, audience, for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.